review the 1D model for spin chain and fermion chain. So as we can see, at each side, we can put a spin or fermion. The spin can be spin up and spin down, and fermion can be the occupied or unoccupied. And the generator of the algebra, we use a Pauli matrix XYZ at each side for spin variable. And for fermion operator, it's generated by the CNC data. And then we focus on the local Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian is some of local term, either spin and fermion and fermionic system. And on fermion, we have the total fermion parity. And in the spin system, we have the Z2 reflection symmetry. So basically, it's kind of you flip the old spin up to spin down state. So it turns out to be these two systems are dual to each other by the Jordan-Wigner transformation. So here is the formula for the transformation for the creation and annihilation operator, C dagger and C. We can map to the lowering and raising operator with this string operator. The reason why we need this string operator is because we want to make sure the fermion at different sites, they anti-commute. So with this Z operator, this will anti-commute with the X and Y here. So this will make sure on the right-hand side, the bosonic side, the operator here has an anti-commutation relation at different sites. So we can try to do some basic transformation. We rewrite the C and C dagger in terms of the major fermion operator. So it's defined by gamma and gamma prime. So in terms of gamma and gamma prime, the formula look nicer because this lowering and raising operator become X and Y. And then we focus on only even algebra of fermion, which means the fermionic operator is generated by even number of Majorana operators. So there are two generators. The first one is the on-site parity. So Pj tells us at the site j, the fermion is occupied or unoccupied. And the second type of operator is called fermionic hopping operator. So it's defined on the link between the site j and j plus one. We our convention is we use the gamma j times gamma prime at j plus one. So all even algebra fermion can be written in terms of a product of these two operators. So to express this operator into the Pauli matrix, we are able to express any fermionic variable in terms of the Pauli matrix. So the Jordan-Wigner transformation becomes very simple after we do this basic transformation. So the on-site parity is mapped to the Pauli Z operator. So the spin up and spin down correspond to the occupy or unoccupy. And the hopping term is a product of X. So we can easily verify these two operators anti-commute if the link J and J plus one coincide with this side J. Yeah. So here's the 1D bosonization. If we naively apply this to 2D system, for example, on the square lattice, we first need to arrange the lattice into some order, for example, 1 to 16 along this path. However, this will cause some problem because if we are interested in the hopping between the side 2 here and side 7 here, so plug in the formula before, you will become this kind of a poly operator. So this has a Z string operator along this path. So originally, this is the local term. It's mapped to the highly non-local term. This is proportional to the system size of this square. So we want to avoid this. So here is the main result of my talk. We showed that in the 2D, every fermionic observer can be mapped to the Z2 gate theory with some modified gate constraint. I will mention it later. So this is some nice property of our construction. First, our construction depends on the spin structure. We usually encounter a spin structure when we try to define a spinner on some Riemannian continuous manifold. For example, the spinner it has an SO3 symmetry. We need to leave it to some SU2 to define the spinner structure. And we require this data, the spin structure corresponds to a lifting from SO3 to SU2. But in our case, we are working on the lattice, and we are working on the spinless fermion. So it's quite remarkable that even in this kind of simple setting, when we try to use the Pauli matrix to express the fermionic variable, we still need this spin structure data. And secondly, we can perform a Euclidean path integral, and we can show that all Z2 theory has a transformation in the action. And finally, our formalism can be easy to generalize to all dimensions. And now I will try to make it clear later. So let me review the meaning of the Z2 gauge theory. So when we say Z2 gauge theory, we mean we put a Pauli matrix, a spin on each edges, but we require some constraint on Hilbert space. So the constraint is called GV. So the Hilbert space is a state which satisfies the GV equal to one. And GV can be defined on vertex or any object such that in each GV, they commute with each other. So the gauge invariant subspace means the subspace which has eigenvalue one under this operator. The most standard choice for the gauge constraint is this one. So consider a vertex. We consider a product of x around this vertex, and we require this equal to b1. So this is sometimes called Gauss law because this corresponds to there's no electric charge at vertex. So given this gauge constraint, we can look for what kind of operator are gauge invariant. So in this case, the gauge invariant operator has these two generate. The first one is the x on every edge. Because the x and x like commute, so this is gauge invariant. And the second type of the operator is the product of z around the face. So we can check this square intersect with this kind of star term by either zero edges or two edges. So we can see this term will commute with this gauge constraint. So there's a famous duality called Kramer-Wenier duality, which can map this Z2 gauge theory to some spin model. So on the right-hand side, the spin model, we put a spin on each face. So at each face, there's X operate and Z operate. So the mapping is defined as following. So for the X on the edges, it's mapped to the product of spin, the X operate on these two faces. And the product of Z around face is mapped to the ZF, the Z operate on this face. And we can check if this anti-commute with these edges, this X also anti-commute with this Z. So this mapping preserves the algebra of the this operator. So on the left-hand side is a little gauge theory. It maps the right-hand side, it's a purely spin model. And then we can check the Hilbert space dimension is the same. So on the Z2 gauge theory, we have the spin on every edges. However, we have the gauge constraint at each vertex. So totally, the Hilbert space dimension is 2 to the number of vertex, number of edges minus the number of vertex. But on the spin side, we have the spin living on each face. So Hilbert space dimension is 2 to the number of face. So this is the duality between these two subspaces. And now our next goal is we will try to modify the Z2 gauge theory such that the gauge theory will map to the fermion instead of the spin model.
Sure. In the other side, is there a constraint on the
ZF? Yeah. So there's one constraint because if we consider the product of the flux around the old surface, around the closed surface, all Z operator will cancel out. So this will correspond to some global symmetry. So on the right-hand side, there's a global symmetry. It's a product of ZF equal to 1.
That's why there's a minus 1.
Yeah, there's minus 1 here. Yeah, this is important. Thank you.
So what if I can on a torus?
Sorry?
What if it would put it on a torus?
Oh, yeah. So on a torus, there will be some extra condition. Because if you consider the product of the X around a huge loop, on the right-hand side, everything cancel out, so we will put the extra constraint on the gauge theory. So if we put on torus, there's a gauge constraint on each vertex, there's an additional two gauge constraint on the two large circles. But you can still count the number of dimensions, it will be the same. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so here's our setup of fermion. So first we draw a square lattice, and we put the fermion at the center of each face. So there's a CF, and CF taker. And it's easier to work in the Majorana fermion. So at each phase, the C and C taker become a gamma and gamma prime. So there's two Majorana fermions per phase. And then we can, similar to the 1D case, we can define a tool generate of fermion operate. The first one is the on-site parity. It's just the fermions occupy or unoccupy. It's in this expression. And the second one is the fermionic hopping. So in this hopping, we need to define some arrow of the edges. And we define hopping from the left to the right in terms of gamma at the left face times the gamma prime at the right face. So this is just our convention. So our goal is we try to impress these two fermionic operators in terms of the Pauli matrix living at the link. So we have each Pauli matrix, each spin on each edges. So finally, there will be the 2-to-1 correspondence from two qubit to one fermion. And I will going to show our conjecture.
Can I think of this as you're gauging the fermion parity?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So here's our conjecture. So for fermion parity, we require this is mapped to the product of Z. So around a phase, product of Z will correspond to a fermion parity at this phase F. So this corresponds to a so-called gauging of fermion parity. But for the hopping term, this is a non-trivial. So for the fermionic hopping around the edge, we define to this bosonic hopping we call UE. So UE is defined in this way. For example, we are interested in the hopping between the phase C and D. We define the UE to be X on these edges times Z at these edges. And for the vertical hopping, the hopping between the B and C, we define the UE, this blue one, as a X on these edges times Z at these edges. So the reason why we require this Z operator is because we know the fermionic hopping, they have some anti-commutation algebra, so which means some hopping that anti-commute. So we need to use the list X and Z to such that sometimes this hopping, they will anti-commute and they will give the correct fermionic statistic. So I will show example here. So consider the hopping between these edges, between phase C and D. By definition, it's X times Z here. And for example, and this one, we consider hopping between these two phases. It's the X at this edge times Z on these edges. If we compare with these two figures, we can see this is Z and this X live on the same edges. So this one, these two figures will anti-commute. So we will say the hopping between U1 and U2 equals to minus U2 U1. And similarly, we can write down the definition of a fermion hopping. The fermion hopping between the D and C is gamma D times gamma prime C. And the hopping between the D and A, from D to A, is gamma D and D prime A. So we can check because these two hopping operate, they share the same Majorana fermion operate, the gamma D. So these two hopping anti-commute. So it's easy to verify that the left hand side will capture the same algebra as the right hand side.
And so as long as we have a horizontal hopping, the bosonic orbitals are like this.
Yeah.
And if it's vertical, it's like that.
Yeah, by translation, yes. Yeah. However, this is not the end of the story. So it turns out to be these two operate, they are not completely independent. If we try to hop a fermion around a phase, so you multiply the hopping around these four edges, it turns out to be this equal to the gamma S squared times gamma D squared. And by the property of the Majorana fermion, it's equal to one. So on the fermionic side, they have the extra identity. However, if we just apply our dictionary here, this operate will map to this kind of product of poly X and product Z operate. So this is not equal to one on the bosonic side. We need to import this condition by hand. So this is called our gauge condition. So it's easy to visualize this gauge condition. The condition is a product of X around these four blue edges times the product of Z around these four orange edges. The total product equal to one. So here is our mapping. So on the Z2K theory side, we have a bosonic hopping, and we have a flux term. And we require this gauge constraint. It turns out to be this Z2K theory can be mapped to the fermionic theory. The UE, the bosonic Huffington, will map to the fermionic Huffington we defined before. The flux here will be mapped to a fermion parity. Yeah. And similar to the condition before, the product of all flux around a closed manifold will give an identity one. So this corresponds to the total fermion parity is even. So the even fermion parity theory can be mapped to this C2K theory. And we can compare with the previous quantum variety. So here, the second one, the flux is the same, but we change the gauge constraint. The gauge constraint here is just a product of x is equal to 1, and we modify gauge constraint, and we also modify the Huffington. It turns out to be after we do this modification, the spin theory is mapped to a fermion, it becomes a fermionic theory.
Does the Fermi operator map to some non-local thing?
It's local to local because you can write down like any Fermi operator in terms of these two.
The single Fermi.
If we want to make, for example, a C dagger,
yeah,
we need to pair it up with something at infinity.
Okay.
So we need to draw some string command these two points, and then it's just like Jordan Wicker, there's
right.
Some non-local.
So there is some expression.
Yeah.
That you know.
Yeah.
I guess so. Previously, when you construct the shape of the protein,
yeah,
that choice is not unique. But we also choose to have this.
Yeah, yeah.
For horizontal and for vertical.
Yeah.
These are two different constructions.
Yeah.
What's the intuitive connection between them?
So maybe I should explain how we define this operator, and I can go through your question later. So people may wonder why we define this of x and z operator. So there's a very, very nice physical interpretation of this operator. So we know in a toric pole, there's two types of excitation. There's M particle and E particle. And if we combine E and N, it's a fermion called epsilon. So we apply the X at these edges. This X will move the M particle from this face to the right face. And similarly, this Z will map this E from this face to another face, this vertex to another vertex. So it turns out to be that x times z is moving the fermion from this phase to this phase. So this is why we expect this can be mapped to some fermionic Huffington. So actually, this is kind of one convention because we can bind the e here with the at this phase, but we can also choose other convention. For example, we can choose the e particle at this vertex, and we bind the different n. So this is just different convention of doing bosonization. Yeah. And the gauge constraint is interpreted as we only allow the epsilon excitation because the M and E, they must be both plus one or both minus one. So like the E and M must appear at the same time at each phase. So the next question is like, is our encoding useful in the simulation of fermion? So for example, can we do an error correction? So it cannot be in this setting, we cannot do error correction because the coefficient is 2. The coefficient is the number of Pauli matrix you need to arrive from one physical state to another state. So in this case, the fermion living at here, if we apply these two operators, it will become fermion living at here. So the coefficient equals to 2. So we want to increase the coefficient such that we can use this fermion encoding to do some error correction. So here's some trick how we increase the coefficients. So when we derive the bosonization map before, we actually only use this property. So we require the Pauli matrix at the same edge, the x and z, the anti-commute. So the natural choice is just like we use the usual Pauli x and Pauli z on every edges. But it turns out to be we can define some more strange operate, we call it x tilde and z tilde. So for example, in this way, so we can see these two operate, they still commute with each other, and this will anti-commute with the z if only if this e and this e prime, they are the same edges. So this x tilde and z tilde, they satisfy this algebra. So we can plug in this kind of new definition of polymetry into our formula of the bosonization map. It turns out to be the Huffington now requires three Pauli matrices. So which means if we use this encoding, the coefficients become 3, and which means the all one QB error can be corrected. And we can do this kind of extension, like recursively. So we can define this operator. I call it this operator called our poly X matrix. And we call this operator called become our poly Z matrix. And we plug in this X tilde and Z tilde into our dictionary before. We show that in this encoding, the coefficient is greater than 5. So which means if we use this way to encode a fermion into a qubit, the old qubit error can be correct. So this is the error correcting code for similar fermion on a quantum computer.
So you have the same fermionic model and you just do a math to do two different mappings for the same model.
Yeah.
And why is there any difference in the ability of doing error correction basically? So it's the same fermionic model.
Yeah.
You do two different mappings to two different Bosonic models.
Yeah.
Isn't that at the end there's a difference in the physical ability to do error correction?
Yes, because in this encoding, we made the fermion to be the number of have a larger number of poly matrices. So this is called a stabilizer code. So the gate constraint is a stabilizer, and if we plug in into this new definition, the stabilizer will become larger. So it's a more complicated encoding. Yeah. So the idea of error correction is like you want to distribute your state into some larger Hilbert space, and if you have randomly some error happen, because in this new larger state, in this new larger Hilbert space, the state are more far away. So the local error cannot be destroyed your state. So here we just introduce a new encoding such that in this scheme, the state in the Hilbert space are kind of far away. So such that, for example, in this case, the single qubit error cannot destroy your state.
Can I understand you saying even though the two bosonic models come from the same fermionic model, but when you model the error, they are not exactly the same?
Yes, yeah.
So this is when gauge constraints are not strictly imposed, right? You have soft constraints.
Yes, it usually is imposed energetically. So if it's broken, we can do a measurement to detect which stabilizer are wrong, and then based on the syndrome, we are able to correct the state back into our original state. Yes. So this is the usual how does it work.
For those two different models, is the gauge constraint the same?
The gauge constraint is different. Yeah. Because
can you tell me the difference of these two gauge constraints?
Yeah, so the gauge constraint is a product of X around these four edges and product of Z around these four edges. In the newer model, we need to plug in the X tilde and Z tilde back into that model, so it will become larger, like more complicated. Yeah.
Does it mean that there is, like, in some sense, more constraints?
The number of constraints is the same, but the number of poly matrices into the constraint is different. So which means in your new constraint, it involves more poly matrices. So which means it's more robust against the single poly matrix error. So far, we finished our story on the square lattice. So we will try to be more as general as possible. So we try to define on a triangle lattice. So on a triangle lattice, we put a fermion at the face, the same, and the generate is, so we need to define some error on the edges. This is called branching structure. So using this branching structure, we can define the hopping direction of different phase. So the difficult part is like because of the hopping, they sometimes commute and they sometimes anti-commute. We need to find an algebraic way to express this sign of how does this hopping term like commute with or anti-commute with each other. So first we can do some observation. So for example, we focus on this triangle A and we focus on the hopping between these three edges. It turns out to be there are only one situation, the anti-commute. So the hopping around the edge, they anti-commute, if only if these two edges, they have the same direction on the same face. So for example, in this phase A, we know the face, the edge 1-3 and edge 3-5, they are both the clockwise direction along this face. And the 1-3 and 3-5, they anti-commute. And it turns out to be we can use the car product in algebraic topology to capture this sign. So for the people familiar with the Kapradar, so here's a definition of a Kapradar, and we can see if only if the E1 and E2 is along the H12 and H23, so this Kapradar will give a non-trivial sign. So this will capture the anti-commutation of the Huffington. Yeah, for the people who are not familiar with the Kapradar, you can just take it as a definition. So we use the fermion hopping, this kind of sometimes the anti-commute, we use this hopping to define a Kapradar. The reason why we want to introduce this Kapradar is because we want to impress fermion operator into the Pauli matrix. So this Kapradar will help us to keep track of the Pauli operator. They can anti-commute, just like this relation here. So here is the, I just list the property of the even fermion algebra. So this is two generates, unsigned parity and fermion hopping. So these two are simple, they square to one, and the fermion parity at different side, they are commute with each other. And the hopping term, they only change the fermion parity of the nearby side. And this one is I described in the last pages. We use the Kapradar to capture the anti-commutation of the Huffington. So the last one is a little tricky. So as before, when we try to multiply the fermion around a vertex, we give the identity. So in a general triangulation, when we try to multiply fermion hopping around a vertex, it should give us an identity. So it should be a plus one or minus one. And this plus or minus one is defined by something called Stiefel-Wittig test, so which is the lattice representation of the second cohomology case. So it's just some vertex, a set of vertex. If the V belongs to this set of vertex, this gives you a minus one, otherwise it's equal to one. And we are going to try to construct some polymetrics which capture this the algebra relation list here. So here's the commutation relation, and we can define our bosonic hopping UE to be the X and the HE times the product of Z on the E prime, such that E prime has a non-trivial coproduct with the E. So we can check with this definition, we can kind of mimic the anti-commutation relation here. So here's our bosonic hopping. And by this formula, every fermion hopping can be mapped to some local product of polymetry. So for example, in this figure, we are interested in how does the bosonic hopping on this H35. We just use the formula here, and this will tell us this edge is the product of X times the product of Z on these two edges. So this is a local operator. And similarly, the fermion parity is mapped to the flux operator. So the list generate of the fermion algebra can be expressed by the bosonic hopping and the flux operator. So here is a dictionary of how we do the bosonization. So there's one interesting part here. Because there's one minus sign here, the minus sign of the Stiefel-Wittig class. So in the hopping term, we need to define some plus minus sign here. So we define the E is a spin structure such that the boundary of this E equals to this Stiefel-Wittig class. So this minus sign will cancel out the minus sign here. So when we try to define a self-consistent fermionic theory, automatically we need to choose a spin structure before we if we want to map to some D2K theory. So this the dictionary is like the parity map to a flux. And fermion hopping mapped to this weird bosonic hopping expressed by the Kapradar. And this is a gauge constant, so like product of X and product of Z equal to 1 on the square lattice. And we work on the even fermion parity.
Is this omega 2 a cycle or cocycle or cohomology?
That's a good question. So usually when we talk about a different wave test, we are working on a cocycle. But in this, we work on a cochain. So in the 2D lattice, the two cocycle is point correct dual to the zero cochain. So here the W2 is a zero cochain, which is a single vertex. Yeah.
So it's true that any representation of this specific Whitney class will work on only one specific representation.
You have many choice. So the choice of spin structure or choice of the representative of W2 is arbitrary. Yeah. So any choice works. So there's a many.
Choose zero. Why not just choose zero?
In some cases, you can.
If there has a spin structure, it's choose zero.
If triangulation tells you, any specific triangulation will give you a specific cocycle cultivator.
Okay, specific. Okay.
But like it's from the once you choose your triangulation and orient all the triangles.
Yeah. So in the case of square lattice, so we more or less choose the W2 equal to zero. Yeah, but in some cases, you can.
I'm sorry, I'm a bit confused. If somehow you can't choose W2 to be non-zero, doesn't it mean that you don't you can't define spin structure?
No. The W2 as a cohomology case is zero. But on the cochain level, it has still some non-trivial equation. Yeah. So here we only talk about the on Hamiltonian level. How does the fermionic operate in terms of C and C Dagger map to a polymetrics? So we can try to work with the spectrum picture. So we perform a patch interval to see how is our polarization look like in the 2+1D spacetime action. So here I just review how do we do a patch interval for a standard little guesser. So consider this model. So this is our gate constraint, the standard one. So you can write down the two generator terms. Is a x and a flux operator. And we can calculate the partition function. So the partition z equal to the trace exponential minus beta h. So we can perform this patch integral exactly by the so-called transfer matrix method. And it turns out to be at least a 2D gauge theory. It's become a 3D icing gauge theory. So in our notation, the a is some z2 field, 0 or 1, leaving on a link. And the delta A is just summing over the link around a face. So this so in more usual notation is kind of a curve of this little field. It's a product of the icing variable around face. So this calculation is well known by Kogut in early 1980s. And now we are going to define a new kind of little gauge theory. So here's the original one. So first, we change the gauge constraint. So this constraint, we change into this gauge constraint. So we have multiplied the z term here. And because we change the gauge constraint, we also need to change the Hopping term. The Hopping term original is xe. It becomes our ue. Ue is alpha something Hopping. And we can still perform a patch integral. So we can calculate the action here. So the action, the first term is the same as before. The first term is some icing term. It turns out that there's another term is a topological action is a cup delta a. So the cup product is just like a wedge product in the continuous limits. So which means this new gauge theory has the additional chain Simon term compared to this boson standard one. So we know from our bosonization, this gauge theory can be mapped to the free fermion model. It just sounds the nearest neighbor Hopping fermion model. And we can show that this free fermion model has exactly this action. So this is kind of an exact example of the so-called particle voltage duality. So when you have some scalar field, you cup to the background field A, and you with some transition term, so this will become some fermionic theory. So similar here, so we have some bosonic icing term. We add some transition term, and this will become a free fermion model. So this is just an example of this duality. Yes.
The analogous scalar field, your action.
Yeah, it turns out we are, so here we're only purely a flux, so we have no scalar here. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Is that term basically the AAA term of the Levengood state?
You mean this one?
The ADA, sorry, the A cup delta A.
I think it's not an A.
It's not an A.
Yeah. And now we are going to move the three dimension. So we will repeat the same story in the 3+1D. So first, on a 2D lattice. In the 2D, we use the toroidal. We define an upright, which move the fermion to be our bosonic halving. So in the 3D, we need to find a similar model, which has a fermionic excitation. So this is first proposed by Levin and Wen in 2005. This is called a rotor model. They define the hopping by introducing the framing. The framing is this small shift of edges. So for example, on this edge one, the framing is this blue edges. And we can see these blue edges will intersect with the edge three and edge four here. So we use this framing to define our hopping along this edge to be like x at edge one times the z at three and z at four. Similarly, we use the other two framing to define the hopping upright in other two directions. So it's well known that this hopping is captures some fermionic statistic. So it's quite natural for us to start with this D2K theory, which is hopping, and we map to some fermionic theory. And because on the fermion side, there's some identity when you try to hop a fermion around a closed loop. This will give you a identity. So in terms of bosonic variable, it's a product of the x around this red square times the z tail. And this z is defined by the framing. If we focus on the blue dash square, this blue dash square will intersect with some edges. And we keep track of these edges and we write down a circuit. It turns out to be this is D2K theory with this edge constraint is mapped to a fermionic theory. So here's the story for the 2B lattice. And more generally, we can do this similarly on the triangulation lattice. So the key message is that in the 2D, we use the car product to capture the anti-commutation of the fermion hopping. In the 3D, we can introduce this, it's called higher car product or cup one product. So this is the combinatory definition of this cup one product. So basically, if we try to draw a tetrahedra and we assign some direction, then we can observe the 0, 2, 3 and 0, 1, 2, like 0, 2, 3 is the inward face, which means these two faces are pointing inward to the tetrahedra, and the 0, 1, 3 and 1, 2, 3, like 1, 2, 3, which we go along these edges, these 1, 2, 3 faces are outwards. So we use this car product to distinguish the inward phase and the outward phase. And we use this to define the fermionic hopping. Yeah. So just following the same method, we turn out to be we have the dictionary for the bosonization in the 3D. And we can compare with a 2D result. Basically, these two results are almost exactly the same. We just change the dimension, going to one higher dimension. For example, this hopping is defined hopping as HE, and this becomes hopping at a phase F. And here the cup product is E cup E, become F cup 1F. So we have a formula in a lower dimension. We just change every object into a one higher dimension, and we change the cup product into a cup 1 product. So this analysis works for all dimensions. And something interesting happened because in the 2+1D, there is something similar to the transamington. In the 2D, this becomes this. So the B is some two form. And this term is B cup B plus B cup 1 delta B. So this is a cosine rho squared. Or in general dimension, so we can define the bosonization on all dimensions. And the topological term corresponds to this fermion statistic is in this equation. And the first time I encounter this expression is Professor Xiaogang Wen, when they try to classify the fermionic SPT, they start from some D2 model and they add this topological term and claim they are classifying some fermionic model. So the key message is there. So on the Z2 gas theory, you add this term into your action. The theory you are describing becomes fermion.
sorry, can I say it again? This action on the right hand side, is it written in terms of the co-chains or the
co-chain? In terms of co-chain. If it's a co-cycle, second then just vanish.
Right, that's my question. Why is it important to use co-chains
instead? Because in some cases the configuration of fermion is not necessary from the co-chain. So this is more general, like given any configuration of a little field or any configuration of fermion, you can always express this as with the second term.
Thanks.
Yeah, if you impose the flat condition,
yeah,
such that the delta is equal to zero,
yeah,
there's only the first term left. So the first term is more familiar,
yeah,
the familiar one. Yeah. It turns out to be we need to use the second term to if we want to work in a co-chain level.
So that the fermions live in the N cell.
So in the bosons.
So in
the general setting, we put a fermion at the center of the M simplex, and we put a Pauli matrix on the face. So it's the N minus one simplex. Yeah. So here's our general story. So the final part of my talk is I try to use this technique to relate or construct some fermionic SPT or bosonic SPT. So this is the scheme proposed by Bihawa Gayoto and my advisor Kapusin in 2007. It's more in a field theory level. And on the Hamiltonian picture, this is work out by Tyler here and his advisor Fikowski on the 2.1D case. So they have a clear derivation of this mapping in terms of Hamiltonian level. So in my first part, we have introduced how do we go from the fermion to boson, like fermion model to Z2 gauge theory. And then I will review how do we gauge in the Z2 symmetry, like gauging the higher form symmetry. So after this gauging or ungauging, we can change this Z2 gauge theory, become some bosonic model, and this become a bosonic SPT phase. So here is when we try to get the global symmetry. So on the left hand side, we have the Z2 field living on the vertex. So we have the A equal to 0, 1 on each vertex. And after gauging, it becomes the Z2 field living on each edges. And in this edge, it's just simply A1 plus A2. And this is how we map the state. And for the operate, if we have an X operate here, so for example, this X operate would change the A1 to A1 plus 1. So we go to the right hand side. When we change the A1 value, the value of this edge changed. The value of this edge also changed. It turns out to be there are totally the four edges connected to this vertex. So the X operate on this vertex will be met to the product of X on this four edges. And similarly, if we, I forget to say, so there's an important condition. There must be a global symmetry. So the global symmetry is part of X on all vertex equal to 1. So with this symmetry, we can apply this gauging procedure. So the only non-trivial Z term coming with this global symmetry is part of Z. So for example, the Z1 and Z2. And this will measure the value, the value of A1 and A2, and this will correspond to the Z operate at the center of these edges. So the example is here. So consider we have an icing model. It has sum over OX on the O vertex, and this operate will be met to the product of X around a vertex. And it turns out to be there's a gauge constraint, because in this case, when we try to sum over these all edges, these four edges, every term cancel out. So the product of Z around a face equals 1. And we can impose this constraint energetically. So this means we start with the icing model, we gauge the total symmetry, and this becomes a torical. And in terms of ground state, it's more simple. We know the icing model, the ground state, is summing over all configurations in the Z basis. And when we apply gauging, this state will become the summing over all zero flux configuration, which is the quantum state of Torrey code. Yeah. And now let me introduce what's the one-form symmetry and how do we get it. So on the left-hand side, we have the spin living on the every link. And then one-form symmetry is defined in the following way. First, we draw a small sphere around a vertex. This will intersect with some link. And the one-form symmetry is telling us a product of x around this link equals one. The reason why it's called one-form is because this is a three-dimensional space, and this sphere is some two-dimensional object. So this symmetry operation acting on some co-dimension one object, so this is called one-form symmetry. So the way we get it is similar to before. So first, we have some Z2 field living on links. And after we get it, we just change it to a Z2 field living on the face. And this value is summing over the Z2 value around this triangle. And on the right-hand side, because when we try to sum it over all triangle around this tetrahedra, this will equal to equal to zero, which means a product of Z around this four base equal to one. So this is one form symmetry. After gauging, this becomes some gauge symmetry. Okay, so let me start with some 2D example. So how do we starting from a fermion SPG to bosonic SPG? So first we start with some fermion, trivial fermion. So the ground state is just a vacuum. And when we apply the bosonization map, this parity will be met to the flux. And we know there's a gauge constraint on each vertex. So internal picture, so this is a flux term, and this is a gauge constraint. And if we focus on ground state, we can cancel this Z just by multiplying the Z to the first term. So it cannot be a trivial fermion, it's mapped to the Torrey code. And we know the Torrey code, you can engage the Torrey code to become the IC model. So in this case, we starting from 2D trivial fermion. After the bosonization and engage, we arrive at the IC model. So in the 2D case, it's kind of boring. You study with some trivial fermion and then ending in trivial IC model. It turns out to be the 3D is more interesting. So if in the 3D, on the fermion side, we still start with some vacuum state. And if we try to map to the bosonic Z2K theory, it turns out to be the ground state is at least form. So usually when we write down a ground state of a Torrey code in 3D, it doesn't have this minus one factor. And this minus one vector makes sure that this model has some fermionic statistics. So this factor is very important. And we can engage it to arrive the Z2 SPT. So this is the Z2 one-form SPT. You can express the Hamiltonian by Eisenstein, conjugated by some control Z. So this model is first appeared in a Benny Yoshida's paper 3 years ago. And it's a well study by Lokman and Xiaogang in their recent paper. So the main message is that this one-form Z2 SPT has a boundary, which is a Torrey code. So we can calculate the anomalous symmetry on boundary. So for example, we change the A by some gauge transformation. If the manifold is closed, so the state is gauge invariant under this transformation. If the manifold is open, which means on the boundary, so this gauge transformation will have some non-trivial effect. So in this case, on boundary, we require this GV, this term equal to one. So we can impose this energy term by hand, so which means this Torrey code is a consistent boundary theory for this Z2 one-form SPT. Yeah. So this is the story. So in both 2D and 3D, we can start with some very simple model. In 2D case, it will arrive some IC model. In the 3D case, this will arrive one-form Z2 SPT, a non-trivial SPT. And we can show that this SPT can have the boundary, the Torrey code. So on the fermionic side, the story is kind of boring because we know the boundary of atomic fermion is another atomic fermion in a low dimension. But after we do the bosonization, the story is kind of interesting. We have some non-trivial SPT, and we show that the Z2 gate theory, torical, is a boundary of this SPT. And this story is true for arbitrary dimensions. So in n dimension, we starting one with trivial fermion, we end up with the non-trivial, it's called n minus 2 form Z2 SPT. And this SPT can have this gate theory as a boundary. So, so this gate theory is a bosonic shadow of the n minus 1D trivial fermion. And so far, we only focused on the Z2 part. So we didn't put any symmetry. And it turns out to be we can try to add some symmetry into our system. So for example, in this case, this will have some non-trivial phase, like a super cohomology phase. You will be made to some bosonic SPT. So I will introduce how we do that. So in the 2+1D, the Gu and Wen, the phase, can be characterized by the super cohomology data. So this has nu and n that satisfy the Gu-Wen equation. So basically, this nu part is some bosonic phase term. Then this n tells us how do we decorate the fermion into our theory. So we can use this data, two cocycle, to do some group extension. So we extend a G into some larger group, and we define some cocycle in this larger group. So this corresponds to the shadow model in here. So, and then we can gauge this model, and we apply our fermionization. So we reach the fermionic SPT state, look like here. So the first term is more like the bosonic part. You have the nu on part of nu on the each phase. And the second term is the fermionic part. The S is the Hopping term. So depends on this second data N, we know how do we hop the fermion starting from a vacuum state. So we have control a finite depth quantum circuit such that when we apply this on the vacuum, we arrive at the SPT bound state. So we can check this state is truly symmetric. And we can write down the staking law. If we have the quantum circuit for the one phase, and we have the quantum circuit for another phase, if we multiply them, we get a it corresponds to the quantum circuit for another phase. So this tells us how the two different phases stake with each other. And we can show this state has different physical data corresponding to different phases, like the symmetry factorized on some defect according to this second piece data.
So it's known for some fermion SPTs, in some cases, if you have two different fermion SPTs,
yeah.
We engage the Z2 fermion pairs, you get the same SED.
Yeah.
How is it compatible with what you said?
Yes. So I think when we said two different fermionic SPT, for example, the same SPT, because we didn't check the label of the anion. Like if we keep checking like the label of each charge, we are able to distinguish different phase. And the other way to do it is you have two different fermionic SPT, you first stack them. So you stack one with the inverse of another, and you map to the bosonic shadow. So it turns out to be this is a non-trivial theory. So we can say these two phases are different. So the problem is like you have different phase. If the map, they correspond to the same shadow theory. So the way to go around this, before we map to the bosonic theory, we first stack in these two phases. So if this is A, we stack A with B inverse. So after staking, and then we map to the bosonic shadow, this is some non-trivial theory. So which means that A times B inverse is non-trivial. So A and B are different. Do I answer your question?
Yeah, but you said different domain SPTs will be inverse to different bosonic SPTs?
With some correct label, yeah. So like, for example, torically, there's E and N, you can exchange the label. And after exchange the label, they are the same theory. But like, my statement here is like, if you keep track of the label of E and N, So we differentiate E and N. If you exchange them, they are a different theory. And then we can use this to classify the fermion SP. Or maybe we can talk about this later. It's a little technical. Yeah. Okay. So here's a 2 plus 1T. As you can see, it's two slides. They are more or less very similar. So the only tricky part is here. So in the 2D, we use this 2 per cycle to do the group extension. So we arrive with some bosonic HPT with a larger group. But in a 3 plus 1D, because in a 3D case, we have the one form Z2 living on the link. And we put the vertex with the G element. So the group structure is more complicated. So you have some one form symmetry and you have some zero form symmetry. If you combine these two symmetry, it's called two group. It's called two group structure. And this two group structure, the extension is curved by the three core cycle. So it turns out to be we should start with some bosonic HPT with the higher form symmetry. And then we apply our gauging and apply our formalization, we arrive at the fermion HPT. It turns out to be the formula very similar. You just go from the lower dimension, phase and edge, become tetrahedral and phase. Yeah. But on the bosonic side, it's more tricky. So we require this kind of, this is related to some higher category, but it's just some one form and zero form symmetry. So this is the final slide of my talk. So it turns out to be that Xiaogang, Zhuwen, Xiaogang, and Witten, they construct some boundary construction of a HPT state. So at the boundary, they define something called group extension. So such that on a boundary, the data is trivialized. So we can do a similar thing in our story. So we start with the super cohomology data. And on the boundary, we do the group extension such that these two super cohomology data is trivialized. And at the boundary, we put the extra degree of freedom. So we put the latest K group here. We put a K spin on the boundary. And we put a boundary fermion. It turns out to be we can write down the 3D fermionic SPT with the gap boundary. So in this case, so this part is the bulk part, and this part is the edge part. So we can see this boundary and bulk, the formula are very similar. So we may wonder, oh, this boundary theory is another SPT. It turns out to be no, because this nu and n, they satisfy the Gouin equation. So this is the fermionic SPT. And this n and, this is eta and beta, they satisfy this equation. So they don't satisfy the Gouin equation. So this is the boundary gauge theory. So in the case of G equals to Z4 times Z2, we can trivialize this data by K equal to Z4 extension. So which means this fermionic SPT phase has the boundary Z4 gauge theory. So this is kind of consistent with the Ashvin, Lucas, and Max, they proposed in their paper about the fermionic SPT of this symmetry group. Yeah. So here's the conclusion of my talk. So first, we introduced the bosonization in 2D, and we proposed an error correction code for fermion with ability to correct all 2-qubit error. And our mapping preserves locality and have a general description in a higher dimension and arbitrary lattice. And our construction depends on spin structure and silver winning case explicitly. And finally, we use this bosonization technique to construct different either higher group bosonic SPT or the wave function of the super cohomology fermion SPT with gauge boundary construction. Thanks for your listening.
Yeah, maybe one question. So, do you know if this is like broadly you can tie it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's similar to Jordan Vicker, but like a fancier version?
Yeah.
Is there some like, I don't know, non local Boisonization based on?
So actually, if we go back to our slides on the square lattice,
yeah.
We can turn out to be with some choice, we can make sure, let me, here. So with some choice of the Bravi key type, the ordering of the edge around this link, the list belong to the Bravi key type. I call it super fast simulation of Fermion. Yeah. So on the square lattice, we can show that they are kind of equivalent. But if we go beyond this square lattice, I think they are different approach. But they are also the Z2 gauge theory, because when they define some hopping, there's addition constraint, like hopping or a fermion around the loop equal to one. So they also put some gauge constraint.
I wonder if you looked at the, I mean, we know that there's sort of fermionic SVTs that go beyond this kind of super cohomology,
mm-hmm.
like the extended super cohomology and so on. Do you have a similar story in the works for those?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question, because for beyond super cohomology part, so for example, in the 2D, Bikowski, they have some decorated domain wall construction. So basically, you have some Z2 spin, and on a domain wall, they pull a key type chain along this on this domain wall. So on the boundary, there's a dangling Majorana fermion. So however, if we try to bosonize, so this key type chain will be bosonized to some symmetry Borken phase of the B model. Like, let me just write. So the trivial fermion will be mapped to the trivial IC model if a key type chain. So this will be mapped to the symmetry Borken phase. So I have tried to incorporate this into our story of fermionation. But this is a symmetry Borken phase, so there's no symmetry circuit. I write down in my slide. So at this point, I still don't know how do we add this beyond super homology phase. Yeah. So this is, we show that this circuit is symmetric. It has a staking law. But I don't believe there's some finite depth circuit you can go from here to here.
Yeah, I mean, there is. It's a new problem to develop.
Yes, sir?
Like the Gitai non-trivial state maps to a CAD state.
Yeah.
And so new problems in that shows you there's no finite circuit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this corresponds to some non-trivial quantum automata in 1D. Some shift.
Yeah, I mean, there are many ways of preparing the GHC state, but none of them are finite depth.
Yeah. So we cannot have a symmetry finite depth circuit, so but we are still working on that.
Okay, well, let's thank you.
Okay.